How should we address you? Your Highness? What's your nomenclature?
My liege.
Your pronoun?
Well, I'm the king, so you can talk to me. You could say the king. You could say your Highness. You could say your Majesty. You can, you know, make it informal. Well, king, how about that? So it's just, it's not a big deal.
Can I say my liege?
Huh?
Can I say my liege?
Absolutely.
That's my favorite.
You can say the big guy.
This is Why, with your hosts, Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling.
How does one rise to the throne?
How did I rise to the throne?
Yes, yes.
The previous king abdicated the throne, and the kingdom and the powers that be looked upon me and decided that I would be the best to go forth and represent them. And that's what I've done for 21 years now, is represent the Texas Renaissance Festival.
So it was no woman in a lake or sword in a stone, nothing like that.
No. That's sort of the more famous king.
Well, true, though, but
I do like that idea. Indeed,
What does a normal day look like for you? You get up, you tax the serfs. But then what?
We generally greet all our guests at the front gate, which is a great time for us because we can get to see, you know, who's out there. And usually we have several hundred people, up to 1,000 people at the front gate ready to open up. We introduce ourselves, greet them. We have a cannon blast and we open the gates. From there, we move inside. Then within 15, 20 minutes, we'll have a morning proclamation where we go and we introduce all the villages and the guests filling the villages, because I'm the king of the festival. But in order to celebrate the festival, I've invited the king of England and his wife, the queen of Spain. Juana and Philippe. So we have Henry and Catherine of England, Juana and Philippe of Spain. We have the bonny Prince Charles of Scotland, who's here. We have the royalty, the Duchess von Cleves, who is here for the German court. We have the Italian, the Borgia family, and they consider themselves to be kings. We have the King of Transylvania, so the King of the Fairies, Oberon and Titania. So we have all number of people. So we have to introduce them to our guests. And so we have our morning proclamation, and we introduce our guests to the theme. Every weekend we have a theme. For instance, the last weekend we had out here, we celebrated heroes and villains. So
okay.
I spent the weekend dressed up as Julius Caesar, and my beautiful queen dressed up as Cleopatra. In future weeks, we're going to have a barbarian invasion, so I'll dress up as a barbarian king, and my queen will dress up as, of course, the barbarian queen. We'll have a Highland weekend, and so then we celebrate everything Scottish with Highland games and all that sort of thing. And then, of course, we conclude at Christmas, and we have a Celtic Christmas celebration, and I get to put on my Father Christmas outfit, and we have a great time, and I visit with the children as well as several other people. So we have a grand time out here every weekend.
See, this is the kind of kingdom that all countries and places should be. It's nothing but theme parties. No wars, no battles, just theme parties all the time.
No,
the world would be a happy place if it was all like the Texas Renaissance Festival.
Well, that's precisely, it's precisely right. And that's how we see it as a nexus of time for, you know, we are Renaissance Festival. Renaissance means rebirth. So of course, you know, we're not only going back looking into the past at the Renaissance, but we're also trying to create a new festival for a new time and a new generation. We work on that.
How has the festival changed in the past 20 years of your reign?
Well, in my reign, and if you look at my reign, I took over about halfway of the festival's life. The festival's 45 this year, so I've been king for 21 years. When I began, the festival, I think, was just reaching its legs and getting big. And for the last 21 years, we've increased our attendance. We've almost doubled it. We've gone from about 200,000 to 300,000 people a season to we're just over 500,000. So between 500,000 and 600,000 almost every year come out here and visit us over our 9 weekends. We recently went to 9 weekends. Previously, it'd been 8. When I started, we were only 7. So as we get more and more people and the weekends become busier, we add a weekend to allow you know, more people to enjoy it without feeling like they're cramped and crowded into it. Because part of the enjoyment of having a 55-acre site is that people can wander around, they can visit all these shops, visit all the artisans, enjoy the people on the street, but they can also go back to our magic garden, they can walk around and where it's relatively quiet and peaceful in woods with these beautiful, we call them little temples set up in honors of different flowers and different themes. So it's absolutely a beautiful, beautiful area you can go. You can go up to a part where it's all noisy with all the games and clanging and bells, and they can throw axes and shoot bows and arrows and just have a grand time, dunk a wench, throw tomatoes.
Who doesn't want to do that?
Some rude person, you know, so there's all sorts of fun things that people can do out there.
Do you get tired of this? I mean, there's so much. It sounds like, yes. I mean, do you sometimes get up in the morning and think, I need another proclamation, like I need a mace in the crotch?
Not yet. Okay. I certainly in a mace in the crotch, that's a pretty hardcore thing indeed.
True, but
I've taken a little bit of that. Right. But true, I've done lots of sword fighting growing up. It's true. But alas, I haven't yet. And that's part of the joy about having this type of festival is our audience is always changing. It's always growing. There's always somebody that doesn't know or hasn't been here before. Or what's wonderful about our guests is they'll bring out their friends and they will tell us, oh, look at this person who's never been here before. I brought them. And so then we meet them and we speak with them. And we have a good time. So it really doesn't become boring. And again, I feel the onus that I am representing so many artists, and I'm representing, you know, 40 years of history out here. You know, our owner who's devoted his whole life to creating this area and spent time in developing the gardens and developing the stages and the infrastructure for the people to build their booths. So they don't want to build a beautiful booth if we're not creating beautiful infrastructure for them to build it. Mm-hmm. So they have to see that the fair is investing as much as they are every year.
And you have a number of guests that come every single weekend, correct? Aren't there some
absolutely.
People that don't miss a day? They're here as much as you are.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we call them, they are probably our most famous patrons. They're the patrons we can rely on the most. And they have, since they started coming, they continue to visit the fair. They camp out in the fair. They've gotten to create friendships out here, and then they'll form groups and clans and bands. So you go out there, you'll see crews, and you'll see hordes, and they all have specific names: Brigadoon, Valhalla. There's the emergency zombie response team.
Ooh.
There's the Call of Booty. There's all sorts of names, Ramoth and the Sons of Ramoth, and just all the Dark Lady, and that's part of our ASL, America Sign Language Group, who are out here performing on the weekends and translating what we say, you know, into sign language so that all people can enjoy what we have to offer. So these people form these groups, and I think that perhaps we've hit upon what I personally feel is one of our strongest qualities of the festival, is that when people come out here, and they enjoy it and they have a good time and they've been through the festival, they slowly take ownership because their experience, what their particular experience is unique to them.
Sure.
So they come out, they're going to meet people in different orders, they're going to visit different shops, they're going to find something enchanting, something they like. And provided we've given what we can so that they can have a good time and do all these wonderful things, they feel like it's there. So they take ownership of that experience. And then they come back another year and they have that. Then they bring their friends and they come to the festival. I've been doing this for years. This is my festival. Here at the festival, we do this. And it's when they take that ownership and feel it's a part of their life and something that every fall they want to partake of, whether it's one particular weekend that they wait for to come out here or whether they're here all 19 days of the festival. They feel like it's partly theirs. And that's what we want them to do. We want them to take some ownership. We want them to feel like it's their festival, that their experience is unique. And as we celebrate holidays and experiences, and as they raise their family, because again, if, you know, for the last year, if we're averaging over 500,000 people, we have all kinds of situations. There's people get married out here. People get engaged out here. People hold memorials out here for friends who used to party out here who are no longer here. You know, people, we've had, you know, the ashes of, you know, many close friends and people we don't know spread because those people felt such a connection and such a desire to be out here. So it starts to transcend what you might think of as an ordinary entertainment experience. Well, here's a story I've told many times, but I think it sets a good example for what I'm trying to express to you. One evening I was out as king and I'm enjoying the festival and I was carrying a rose and I saw this lady and she was sitting in a chair. It was a wheelchair. And I started talking. She was an older lady and we had a great time and she smiled and I ended up, you know, I had such an enchanting time. I gave her the rose and we took pictures. We just had a lovely time. And you say goodbye. And as a performer, you know, as the king, I feel excited and happy to do that. Glad I could make somebody's day. And, you know, you move on and you're trying to greet other people and you let that go. Well, a year later, I'm out at the festival coming up and a young man walks up to me and says, "Hey, you may not remember this, but last year you did this and this," and it was sounding more familiar to me. And I was like, "Oh yeah, I do remember. And you know, I remember we had a good time. I gave her a rose." He says, "Yes." He says, "Well, we took that picture, and I just want you to know she kept it on her nightstand." You know, that it was a wonderful memory from her, and in fact, it was one of her best memories that she had experienced. And I want to let you know because she just passed away.
Oh.
And, you know, and this was his mother, you know, mm-hmm. and suddenly there's a transformation right there. It's like, here I am, king of this festival and all of that, but you're touching people's lives. You're affecting, you're leaving impressions. And that's a very important thing, almost sacred in some
sure
ways, in which I think all entertainers, actors, and performers, I think we all have a sense of that even though it's all maybe in the theater or on stage, there are moments when you really touch people, and especially in an interactive theater environment the way we are.
Sure.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to the festival. And these people, you know, are bringing real life situations in.
Sure.
Several years before that, when the 9/11 occurred in September. So it was very prevalent when we began that year out here. And we were having, there was much difficulty. How do we do this? How do we address, how do we honor this situation, but yet still give people an opportunity to relax and to throw it off and to not think about it for a few minutes.
Sure.
And, you know, relax. And we came up with it, our jousters and, our entertainment came up with an idea that we'd have our white knight, the king's knight, ride with new colors. And I would present him with these new colors and then we'd go ride. And of course, the colors were the American flag.
Mm-hmm.
And so I unfurled the flag, handed it to the knight, and he rode up and down the tilt field in front of the audience. And they cheered louder than any audience because it gave them an opportunity to vent, you know, their frustration, their pride, their sadness, their surprise, and all of that in an environment. You know, so I guess like them, they didn't have to feel guilty about being out here.
Right.
Yeah, we acknowledge what's happening in our world, and we're not doing this to escape from it. We're just, you know, all things in moderation.
Sure, makes perfect sense. So what drew you to the festival initially?
Well, initially, I was in university, and I was looking, as always, university students are always looking for extra income,
mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough to become involved with the festival at that point, and that was 34 years ago, and then after many years of proving myself, they brought me in. And then, as I said, when it came time to be a king, they chose me to be the one to represent the kingdom, to represent the artists, to represent all the lives that have spent 34 or 45 years for the festival out here.
Did you know you'd be king someday?
I
could you not,
not really
wait to be king?
Yeah, I could not wait. It's true. I wish I'd had that much prescience. That would have been nice. I do remember in high school, half joking to a friend of mine, saying, "Well, what are you going to do?" And I go, "Well, I'm going to be king." And of course, I had no idea I was in way away from here. And of course, I thought myself I was joking. But alas, sometimes the university hears you. I mean, the universe hears you and you end up right here.
You were talking about the experiences you've had in your tenure at the fair and that sense of these people having these groups and coming back every weekend.
Right.
The fact as a performer that all of a sudden, you know, are all these people in costume? Are they sort of contributing to this world that you've built and they're adding on to it? And that's got to be very rewarding to you as a performer to see this thing expand beyond almost the boundaries of the actual fair.
Absolutely. And you're very perceptive to notice that because it is. And it's those people who, again, participate, who put on the costumes, who continue to come out here, who take that ownership. They do add to our experience. And some of them have actually become performers who performed out here. They become artisans. They create their own. It's like, well, you know, I went to the festival for 10 years and I always wanted to be a jeweler. And now I've retired from my job. Now I'm a jeweler. You know,
now you're up to your elbows in chainmail and corsets.
So. Exactly. Exactly. And that happens time and time again. We had a performer come out and perform with us, did a whole season with us, and now he owns the Dragon Slayer, our biggest souvenir booth, and owns the Kettle Corn, you know, Louis. So it does inspire. We inspire each other and we grow off of each other. The audience wants something more. We try to fit that. We introduce something, the audience jumps on that. It's very hand in hand.
To give a shout out to the Dragon Slayer, he had quite possibly the best onesie I've ever seen in a souvenir shop. It said, to be fair, you did give me a sword to play with.
Not like Lil Surf or Lil Eunuch or something like that.
But maybe next season I can put that out there.
We'll see. Yes.
Because everyone wants their child to be a surf someday.
Right.
Exactly. Fingers crossed. Speaking of which, do surf lives matter?
They do matter.
Okay.
For I started off as a surf.
Indeed.
And that's what makes it a very egalitarian society and kingdom with which we live. I may rule with an iron fist, but it's the inside, it's lined with really nice, soft material. And on the outside, you know, maybe it's just got a little feathers. So, you know.
All right, well, thank you for ruining that joke. Now, one of the other big things that you have to do with the fair is the King's Feast.
Oh, yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that? There's a lot of mead, correct?
Yeah, lots of libations in the that's part of the show. It's a 2-hour feast show. It's put on by the Merchant Prince, who again owns the establishment, and puts on a feast in my honor twice a day. He does this at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. And we have a great time doing it. It's 2 hours, 6 courses. So you have all your courses, your salad course, cheese course, meat course, vegetable course, and of course,
turkey leg course.
If you are a vegetarian or a gluten-free, we do have special menus that we can apply to them so they can still come in and enjoy the feast. As you mentioned, we do have mead and all the libations for that 2-hour period. The entrance into the feast covers all of that. And then, most importantly, you have entertainment for 2 hours with the Bordello sisters, three lovely ladies, entertain you for the whole. Yes, exactly.
Like I said, it's a good kingdom.
Yeah. 2 hours, my goodness.
And we have special guests come in, and of course, I come in and at the end and recognize all our guests and say hello to everybody, and then we conclude for the day. So it's a great time. A lot of people like to show up there and begin their day there so they can eat and have some libation, get some entertainment, and then spend the rest of the evening wandering around. Some like to do it as their last thing. They'll come out, spend the morning, come out here, and then at 2 o'clock go to the feast, and that's their last day.
So beyond the feast, I know from experience of being here this weekend, there is food everywhere. There's not just turkey legs, there's every kind of turkey leg. Indeed. And there are cuisines from all over the world. You put Epcot to shame with all the different options. So how does one, as a king, have all of those delectable foods and the meadery on site and the brewery on site and Lord knows what other giant daiquiris I saw on site?
Indeed.
How does one stay in shape as the king?
Well, you walk around a lot because fortunately it's the 16th century, so there are no vehicles.
Yes.
Second,
Pilates, does that exist?
Is that what?
Pilates.
Pilates, does that exist?
I don't know if those have been invented yet. I think we're still trying to figure out the yoga.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Those reformers, though, I think I saw that in the Museum of Torture.
Oh, yeah, like, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of weight loss technique in there.
Yes.
But one learns to eat smaller portions. I like to share a lot because you can graze through the kingdom. So you and a friend or you and a couple friends can go and you can buy something and everybody can partake in that. And then you move on to something else. And as long as you're willing to share, you can try a lot of food and get through a lot of it out here. But it does require a little self-control. Yes. Because you get one of those funnel cakes and you it's hard to want to share it after a little while. You're like, no. Our Queen's yes. Pantry, they make lovely portions of cake for two people to order, but you get about halfway through the cake and you're thinking, you know, you're taking more than me.
Mm-hmm. So. Tell us about the sword fighting. That has to keep you in shape.
Oh, absolutely. I did sword fighting for many years in my youth. And fortunately, we have youngsters that are still continuing the tradition of sword fighting out here. Not only do they sword fight and not joust, which we have four times a day. We have a joust men in armor, on horses at full gallop with lances and swords and axes. And it's quite an extraordinary show. We also have a great group called Full Combat Armor, or Full Armor Combat, pardon me. And what they are, they're gentlemen, they're in, again, full armor, and they've taken swords that are baited, which means they're not sharpened, but they're real live swords. And they beat each other silly.
Wow.
Indeed, for three rounds until one of them stands tall and the other one gives up. And it's absolutely amazing. The audience watches them and you can hear those swords just clanging into that armor. So
I'm not asking you to completely open the kimono, but how much of that is faked? I mean, can you fake a joust? It seems like two people riding at each other at a high rate of speed, no matter if they are blunt with a giant pointed object, someone can get hurt doing that.
Oh, absolutely. And in some of the combat and some of the situations, performers do know what's going to occur and they have to plan for that. But just because one person knows that it's their turn for this segment or to reinforce this show, to be knocked off a horse or to take a sword to the head of your helmet, still requires skill and the ability to do that four nice. Times a day or several times. So we do have jousters to where it's all scoring for points. Mm-hmm. And we've had that out here. That tends to be a little slower joust because it is about points and not oftentimes everybody won't get knocked off. But then there's other times when we have a more dramatic joust where we're sort of recreating some fights and situations that happen in the joust. And again, just because you're aware you're about to catch a lance doesn't really make it all that much easier to get off the horse and to safely get it. I mean, over the years, I've seen our jousters, you know, they've taken quite a bit of damage over there. Mm-hmm. You come off the horse wrong, it's not wrong to break a wrist or to twist a leg or break, you know, a femur or collarbone or dislocate a rib. And
the festival has been around for, you said, 45 years. You've been involved in 30 some years.
Yeah, 34.
And it's grown, it's changed, people have become involved, your kingdom has expanded. Where does it go from here? Where do you see the next step?
Well,
you invading Austin?
Invading Austin. Well, I don't really see us invading other festivals. I think it's an interesting idea. We could go because there's a festival in Austin. There's one up in Dallas. We could sort of consolidate it all. But I think part of our challenge is that we have a new group of people. So part of what we need to do is to continue to attract the performers and the artists and the workers out here from a new generation. We need to inspire millennials who want to learn how to be jewelers or want to do artwork, painting, you know, the Gutenberg press, blacksmithing, broom making, or whatever merchandise or idea they can think that. So we want to inspire them that, hey, here's a place where you can do that, where you can grow. We want to keep aware of the entertainment and the situations that are growing on the world as fortunately, we've always been a very interactive entertainment. So we've always gone to the audience and we're always directly speaking with the audience. So as the audience evolves, we try to evolve with them and take our entertainment and make that experience still relevant to them, as opposed to we don't want to perform in such a way that people are like, why are you doing this? So, and that entails being, you know, aware of the modern society and working and evolving with it and not, and being willing to accept new ways of doing things. So we're always looking for new entertainment experiences. We're looking at new ways of interacting with our audience. We always are looking ways to get our audience to become interactive with us, because it's really important. It's also important to get the audience to ask us, to get the audience to submit. I submit to you, this is funny, and well, yes, it is. And so the more you work with them, I think that'll keep us relevant and keep us modern. And I think if we stick to our name and see Renaissance not only as a way, as a descriptor to a time that has passed, but also as a descriptor to what festivals can become and where they can go, if we keep that balance going, I think we've probably got another 50 years in us. And maybe not me personally, but certainly hope we can inspire people to continue to come out and support us either as behind the scenes or as guests.
Why do you think the festival here and even the smaller mm-hmm. festivals elsewhere has such a universal appeal? Because a lot of the people that are here and dressed and in full mm-hmm. garb aren't necessarily history buffs. They're not necessarily acting buffs, right. But they are so drawn and compelled to this experience. What do you think it is about it?
I think it might play a little bit into like role playing. Mm-hmm. And even more than that, I think it it goes directly to back when we were playing as children. It goes back to our earliest times, the things we grow up as children. That's what we would do.
Sure.
At my time, there seems there were lots of cowboys and Indians mm-hmm. and the soldiers, and you'd go out and you'd play. And then throughout the years, you're mimicking things you saw in media, or you're playing a knight. I think Dungeons and Dragons.
Sure.
Certainly those type of games, those role-playing games where you assume a character in there, lent life to this, because now you're able to go beyond just playing, you know, at a table. Suddenly now you're making your armor. Groups like the SCA were very important in our beginning years. That's the Society for Creative Anachronism.
Thank
And they're a national organization mm-hmm. and they're all over the place. And basically they do what a Renaissance, but they try to instill that into their life and into their style. So some people live it 7 days a week. Some people only do it on the weekends, but then when they come out, they live in a feudal lord system and they've set up and, you know, on private land, they have events where they fight. And so when the festival started there, that inspired them to become out. And for many years, they were an important part in attracting audiences out there. So I think that's it. You can play, you can pretend, even as an adult or, you know, as a young adult, you get to do it. And the more time you spend out here and you see the different costumes, you become inspired to go and buy, or, oh, I like what that person wore, I'm going to wear that. Or if I'm going to be a knight, I want to be a knight and I want to be the green knight. I want to be a red knight. And, you know, and then when we added themes, that gave them even more of an opportunity, because maybe they weren't right on, you know, wanting to be a Tudor Elizabethan wow. character or something like mm-hmm. that. Maybe they wanted to dress up as a barbarian or as a pirate. Pirates are very popular.
It's very popular.
When we introduced our Heroes and Villains Weekend, some of our patrons pondered about that, but there was an opening for it, because we've had so much in popular culture about heroes and villains that now people are putting on these fantastic, you know, Avenger costumes. And what I love is when they put them on in their Renaissance garb. So we have Captain America come out, but it's all in a Renaissance style awesome. Outfit. Hmm. Or Batman will come out and he's yes. wearing armor. And, you know, so it's very fun to see how it all evolves. And, So the themes, again, gave people another way. And then some of them become inspired. They see what's going on. And then they bring characters out we never imagined. There were years that, and we still have them, stormtroopers showing up out here. And then one day, the stormtroopers started wearing kilts. You're like, oh my goodness. And you see Marvin the Martian wandering around. And you see Star Trek people in there using all their little devices to analyze you and try to figure out what planet they've lived on. And again, that leads back to what I was discussing earlier, that ownership. Because once they've been out here and once they've seen it and they realize that we're not out here with school teachers and you must act like this, you must do this. You know, we're out here going, here's fun. Have as much fun as you can.
This year's Renaissance Festival runs through December 1st. For more information and to get tickets, go to texrenfest.com. And they are also on Twitter at texrenfest.
Be sure to follow Why the Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our YouTube channel for some additional great Why content. If you're so inclined, please leave us a review and let us know how we're doing.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hedquist. Our reluctant executive producers are John Sove and Sandy Stone. Our graphic designer is Samantha Mustonen. Our intern is Randy Jeanette. The theme song was performed by the Electrosynthno-Magnetic Polyphonic Orchestra. This one's for Philippe. Thanks for joining us. Flash, we're coming home.